What's happening in your spiritual universe?
I have a friend or an acquaintance who is kind of going through a breakup with his girlfriend, loved one, who left him for another man,
I
and
hate when that happens. Except if I'm the other man.
And he's kind of freaking out, so I struggle a little bit for giving him consolation or advice. You know, what can you say when a person is just kind of going through the self-torture?
Yeah. Well, these breakup things that happen all throughout life. I mean, you could lose your favorite dream catcher and flip out. I mean, what is it about our identity and the dependency in included in our identity that makes us so acquisitive and proud and treats everything in our experience like chattel, including someone that we say we're in love with. So our being in love with them is absolutely dependent on their continuing to treat us kindly, affectionately, perhaps intimately, and loyally. And if they choose to find their joy elsewhere, then we're just a heap of anger and disappointment and retribution, shame. And that's just for starters, right? So it all comes down to an extreme myopic self-centeredness. And when life says, hey, we're going to turn the dial on you right now, the depth and the vulnerability of that self-centeredness comes pouring out. Either we're willing somehow to get to the bottom of it, or the booty of it, or we're not, which means we'll just repeat the same curious dilemma of latching on to a soul temporarily or otherwise, incarcerating them, having them incarcerate us, and then someone has a shitstorm if the relationship reveals itself to be no longer, to have no more utility. So my hat's off to the gentleman.
And he's in he's feeling so much pain about it now. You know, he's seems to be stepping through some realizations or reflections similar in some way to what you're sharing now, but also I think his focus now is on, well, how do I get some relief from this pressure?
Well, the what he's feeling, and we all know the feelings, it's not like those feelings were created out of thin air by virtue of the failure of the relationship. The relationship, like so many other things, mute the fundamental existential self criticism and loneliness that we already suffer from. And so when the relationship fails or whatever it is fails or goes away, that's when our true disappointment, our true anger, our true self-centeredness emerges. So the feelings that he's having were already absolutely, you could say, dormant, available, sub or unconscious within his human experience. And this event is just, pulled the trigger on it. The event's not causative, which is weird. We want to think the event is responsible for how flimsy and self-loathing and non-confident I am in the face of the miracle of living. But that's not the case. So we, somehow magically gravitate toward persons, relationships, and events that at first appear to ameliorate just how frightened and paranoid we are. And so we cling because we hate ourselves. And the relationship is an ameliorative for just how much we hate ourselves. And when the relationship or whatever it else fails, then we're back to hating ourselves and the volume's up really loud. So, the best thing you can say to a guy like that is, fuck you. You lucky dog. Fuck you. Because it's not like any of us, have any advantage, right? It's not like Carolyn Meese has transcended anything, or Wayne Dyer has transcended anything, or Alan Steinfeld has transcended anything.
Well, that one, I don't know.
Now maybe he has. Certainly, Deepak Chopra has. Yeah, this is. I mean, when we rely on the superficiality of our imagination of others, right? Not the presence or actuality of others, but our imagination of others. If we rely on that as an ameliorative for our own self-loathing, it's not going to last. It's not going to work. So he's lucky. Let him do some, let's just say, serious work on just how angry and shallow his consciousness actually is. And
I
I'm not
think
singling him out.
when you say work, I think that's copyrighted by Byron Katie, so you can't
Yeah,
say.
well, yeah, really. So we'll call it Gork. I'll copyright. We'll call it the Gork. Yeah, really. I'm when, fuck him. And that's said with all affection. Now, welcome to the club, Dudenheim. Get with the program instead of, hiding behind your crappy, superficial poser self. Take that and see if you're ready to, wake up a little bit. Maybe that's a little cruel, but what else? Anything else said to this bastard will just be an ameliorative, and he'll just return right back to the scene of the crime. Which is what we all do until we stop doing that. Is he Is he a guy you know from what's his name, Circles? The English character?
Well, actually, he's a friend of a friend, so I don't know him directly, although I did meet him once, so
Yeah.
yeah, he was a follower of Osho.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, that says it all. Mean, Osho was the shit, really. He was a little bizarre, and maybe there, was one too many Rolls Royces or 18 too many, who knows. But his yoga was true. It's just that it wasn't, understood by all that many. And of course, if you're appealing to a large number of people, so much so that they build a city somewhere in Oregon, and then they poison the local voting population by pouring salmonella on the local salad bar. You have to kind of rethink, what Osho was doing. This work, this beautiful gesture of discovering transhuman intelligence is just not done in large groups. And so the profundity of his, yoga or message or potential had to have been, just geometrically speaking, meaningfully, crazily diluted by the size of the organization that he engendered in India and Pune, and then, of course, later in Oregon. And some say that, we're on the inside. Is it the whoever the U.S. authorities were that managed to throw him out of the country, poisoned him on the way back to India? So, I wish him well. Invite him to join our Tuesday night Inquiry into Awakening meetings, and we'll just carve him up real good.
I would, but he's a German living in Germany.
Well, there you go. Those Germans, you can't do anything for them.
No.
Yeah. They're too strange. But that's what, right? I mean, that's what life is for. It's either you somehow you learn to get underneath it, discover the miracle that's right under your nose, or you live superficially within the boundary field of failed and superficial human relationships as a cover for just how much you hate yourself. It's not that complicated, really. Anyway. The fun thing is, not to put anyone on the spot, not that I could put anyone on the spot because no one's interested in pretty much what I have to say anyway. Thank goodness for that.
Then you can get away with anything.
That you can get away with anything. Yeah, I mean, we're on the spot because this is this. We don't have a life that we can live after we get over losing our lover. We don't have a life that we thought we lived while our lover was so-called loyal to us. We only have this right here, right now. This right here, right now. This. And if it sucks because of ideas. And if it's great because of ideas. What is it, really, if it's not constructed out of ideas? How many, you know, humans, not that it matters, can even begin to appreciate that if this is anything, finding out what it is, you have to do right here. And that it has nothing really to do with the tapestry of our human life is très bizarre. You know, our habit is to make this relevant about us or our experience or our life. This unrelenting pressure to make this relevant. And by insisting that we make this relevant, we become humorless. Because it's not relevant. Trying to make it relevant to me means I've entered into, you know, the danger zone. With Kenny Loggins. Now I'm cavorting with Kenny Loggins in the danger zone of insisting that this be relevant.
That's a little like Rod Serling when you say that. It sounds more like the Twilight Zone.
I know. Well, I was talking in a weird staccato way when I was talking to Suzanne because the echo was so bad I had to say like one or two words at a time. So now I'm kind of enjoying being Rod Serling. Maybe that's why he talked that way, because he had like an echo in his head.
Probably.
So the what is it? The first rule of Fight Club is this is not relevant. Duh. Guess what? Psst, check it out. Your present experience, it's not relevant. Not to you, not to anybody. When you're free from the nagging affliction of being relevant, of feeling this as being relevant, you're off the hook. That's what we're so terrified of.
What does feeling like you're not relevant feel like?
Well, here you are. This is it. If it feels like anything, it feels like this. When you're not relevant, meaning you're not suffering from imagination trying to convince you of something, you're this. And some might report that this is some wondrous shit right here when we're not imprisoned by relevance.
So then I would say seeking is looking for something that's not present, that's not here.
Yes, seeking is the idealization of relevancy or texture that is presumed not to be immaculately present. And so seeking is a way of extroverting, attempting to find more, better relevance than the Brahmanic irrelevance that is already present. Yes, and the relevance one is seeking is only seductive because it's relevance for or to or about me. Right? Seeking means I must feel better. I must see more deeply. I must be relieved of mind. I must be relieved of affliction, of kilesas. I must emulate the Buddha. And all of that is just bullshit for God, I hope I could become more relevant in the future.
I like the way Chico Marx put it. There's lots of relevance in the zoo.
Right. Really. Jai Chico. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Chico, Hare Chico. Chico, Chico, Hare Hare.
You may have something there.
I think so. We might be onto something. Yeah. Here's presence for, you know, who knows what to call it. What are you going to do about it? What do you need to do about it? What do you want to do about it? Why invest it with any relevance at all and therefore have to convert it into something, convey it as something, feel it as something, capture it as something, own it as something, explain it as something? These are all the myths of imaginary relevance. It's way, way more fun to be irrelevant. Then all the artifacts of your life, you know, show up as curious accoutrements. Everything's, you could say, eligible to come and go, right? That's very different than our dear friend who's suffering in Germany, where everything is not free to come and go because his relevance is defined by loyalty paid him by someone other than him. How can someone else possibly alleviate his own fundamental disloyalty? They can't. And that's what he's learning, if he's willing to go deep enough to get it. Otherwise, he, like so many of us, will lick his wounds, swear that he'll never date another woman, trust another person, all that kind of stuff that happens. And then as his, biologic and pheromonal interests He'll be on the prowl again for someone else or something else to assist him with being relevant. Because he, like most of us, absolutely despise the revelation of irrelevance. Oh well. When you listen to the kinds of questions that speakers generally share at your standard Adyashanti retreat or wherever, they're all about the presumption, the insistence, the assertion of relevance. All of them. That's the curious core and kernel of, what might be referred to as a duality. Presence personified. Presence anthropomorphized is a lonely business. Presence personified as a lonely business can't help but to thirst for relevance. Which is the wrong direction. It's the incorrect direction. It's the samsaric direction. The establishment and the insistence, the praying and the supplicating for relevance. And from whom are we wishing to get this relevance from? Ascended masters, Jesus. Prahlad Brahmachari, Byron Katie, Peter Brown. Who are we trying to get this relevance from? Bentinho Massara? There's no one here that is in possession of anything so valuable that they could be relied upon to give us relevance. They can't. Our girlfriend, our wife. Our children, our broker. No one is in possession of anything to be able to offer another so-called human being relevance. That's the great terror that we have. We see how bereft of magical powers we are in that way, that we cannot really offer anyone any relevance, nor can we receive any from anybody else. And we run hither and thither, warp and woof, flotsam and jetsam, to establish relevance, and we don't recognize that it's impossible. Our freedom, if there is such a thing, is not as a consequence of accumulating anything, getting it right, reading the Akashic records from cover to cover. Our freedom is this perfect irrelevance.
Well, what I seem to be trying to understand from this explanation, and please correct me if I'm not sensing this in the right direction, but this what you express as irrelevance. The way I understand it, and you'll have to excuse me if I use some new ageisms in the way I express myself, but it seems as if there's this incredible kind of juice or energy in that irrelevance. What I have sensed before in having that feeling or experience or whatever you want to call it is this rush of creativity in that being in that. And and being in that kind of moment of creativity, it does appear to me as kind of like an expression of irrelevancy, the way I hear what you're saying.
Well, what if you don't qualify anything? That doesn't refute all of the miraculous sine waves coursing through your experience. But they don't actually mean anything. They don't go anywhere. Even if you were to build the Eiffel Tower out of paper mache and ice cream sticks, which, you know, as an example of a burst of creativity, right? Artistic or expressive creativity. That doesn't add or subtract anything from the profundity of your irrelevance. So, you know, creativity, rage over the loss of a relationship, pain and sorrow, paralysis, ecstasy, joy, addictive drug use, addictive sex, addictive alcohol, addictive food. What? Nothing is other than anything. Nothing is better or worse or higher or lower than anything. It's just what's going down in your experience, in the multivalent, you know, miracle of what we call life or living, or dare I say human. Once we give it relevance, then I'm aiming for better and eschewing worse. And as long as I take myself as a individuated entity inside a corporeal sheath, loaded with more preference than I can shake a stick at, then I'm miserable. And that's the consequence of insisting upon or seeking relevancy or durability for one's experience. You could flip the words too and say that as you drop into absolute irrelevance, that that's discovered to be all that's ever been relevant. But again, it's not contingent upon one's persona, right? This presence is not definable. You can't wrap a rope around its neck and take it to the barn. So as long as we're identified with, you know, the symptoms of experiencing and the lust for relevancy, we're not paying, you could say, sufficient attention to what this actually is, because we're caught up in what we imagine it to be, or what we imagine we want from it, or from ourselves, from experiencing. But experiencing has come about involuntarily. And experiencing will also arguably leave or change its nature once the physical dies. Again, involuntarily. So between the involuntary presumption of birth and the involuntary refusal of death of the physical, we think that we are imbued with tremendous volition. And that volition is, for us, a sacred cow. And the fabric of all suffering. And that's cool. It's not like that's good or bad, or what a tragedy, or what a waste of time, or what a tremendous thing it is. Again, because once we take out our measuring tape and assign relevance, we're doomed. We're doomed to superficiality and mediocrity, selfishness, manipulation, and the amelioration of an existential panic we don't want anyone else to see. You wouldn't want to say anything, you know, too bad about it, because arguably pretty much everyone lives that way. You don't want to offend anyone. You know, becoming or being an ideal human, let's say a spiritual human, a righteous human, a wealthy human, a successful human, is just so much pain. Irrelevance is far better. Again, you know, subjectively speaking. That's the rubric. Rubik. The rubric of the Rubik of the cubic.
Yeah, everybody seems to be improvising all the time.
Yes, this is that's all this is really is a clusterfuck of improvisation. Yeah. I mean, what forces are there, and what names do we give them, if at all, for what's animating all of creation? What's a animating the phenomenal expression of a miraculous, unbound universe of spiral light beings? And what we call the curious self-conscious nature of, the human bacterium. We don't understand dolphin speak, so it's hard for us to say just how profoundly intelligent and funny they are. And dolphins may or may not understand human speak, and God knows what they're saying about us. We may never know. Extraterrestrials may come and land in Central Park, and instead of saying take me to your leader, they may just take a dump on the Great Lawn and then fly away. And in their culture, that's the best gift they could bestow. We would say, oh, that was rude. They were just using Earth as a as an outhouse. But they would say, hey, those humans are great. We're going to leave them our poo. And which if ingested becomes a wormhole.
They might say, we're just copying you.
Yeah, really. That's right. I mean, everything that's appearing in experience as it's fermented and fomented as meaning is imaginary, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So that if that doesn't tell you something. And then we insist that even though we can observe that whatever is appearing in mind as an opinion about experiencing is imaginary, still we conduct ourselves as if we're absolutely hell-bent on getting this imagination to work on our behalf. I mean, we just don't see the surreal nature of arbitrary meaning assignment and arbitrary universe creation. We don't see it, so we think that we'll just continue assigning meaning, suffering from meaning, aspiring for better meaning, hoping the guru will show us the right way for meaning making. We will use the secret, the laws of attraction, and anything else anyone has to sell us so that we can continue the hysteria and the ruse of arbitrarily assigning meaning to the miracle of present experience. And then we have all the talking heads that have these kinds of glorious conversations on podcasts and elsewhere and give everyone the benefit of their opinions. Deepak Chopra is happy to give you his opinions. So's Jeff Foster. You know, Isaac Shapiro. They're happy to give you their opinions and assist you navigate the vagaries of your fucking crappy life. All the luminaries that are interviewed on Buddha at the Gas Pump and Ian McNay and Renata McNay and all of these other, you know, spiritual talk shows that you see dotted on the internet. Who's talking about what? It's just a bunch of people giving their opinions. About what? About what? What can they say? What can they say about this? It's real according to this reason, or the Buddha said this, the Buddha said that, Nirsagadatta said this, Ramesh said that, Wayne Lickerman said this, Bala said that, Peter Brown said something, Paul Hederman said something, Pamela Wilson must have said something, and she's cute, so that really must have, that must mean something. You know? And the list goes on and on, right? You know, and Scott Killaby wants to save you from all of your addictions, and he even has a center out in Palm Springs, and that they do, you know, they tap your chakras. Yeah, and you turn down your codependent volume control. And you know that if you go to Byron Katie's website, she will convince you that she's helped not one or two, but hundreds of thousands of people. By doing the work, that now their opinions about things have improved because they may have fewer opinions about things or fewer beliefs, but their, you know, their life has improved thanks to Byron Katie and the work or the gork. Can't even say the work anymore without being sued. I'm going to get a letter, you know, a registered letter tomorrow saying, hey, you said the work. We're going to sue you because that's Byron Katie's stuff. I said, oh, well, it's I have a lisp, so I meant the gork. Please don't sue me, you fucker.
I could say I was in my office and my boss said, "Did you do the work?"
It's none of your business. I was talking to my boss. So isn't it curious? Here we have the miracle of call it experience or the miracle of presence. I don't want to get too, you know, Eckhart Tolle about it. Fuck him too. And there's really nothing. There's nothing more to say about this. It doesn't mean we have to become, you know, dumbfounded. We can have a lot of fun. We can also see, which is, I think, somewhat profound, that any meaning that we assign to this present moment is arbitrary. And comes through a very, very narrow bandwidth of possibility. And that's how we construct our lives and all of the thoughts that afflict us, the regrets, the disappointments, the embarrassments, the behaviors that we don't want anyone to know about. Yeah, that's how we live. All, you know, bollocksed up. In imagination. Profound. Here we are in the, you know, sitting in the midst of profound, radiant imagination. And we find this unsatisfactory. We insist that this is insufficient. No good. It has to be better than this. This can't be all that there is. This can't be as good as it gets. That's how we convince ourselves. And so we completely, blow off the present radiant miracle, the unobtainable, irrelevant present radiant miracle, and then create stories about it, which incarcerate us as naysayers, seekers, people, pundits with opinions, with the right way to feel about this. Like Patanjali said, do it this way, right? Or Ramakrishna had some ideas. And his ideas, well, they counted for something because he was a demonstrative God man. He went into samadhi looking at a, toothbrush. Mean, if you hang out with a guy that goes into samadhi looking at a toothbrush, you want to listen really carefully to what he has to say in hopes that one day you'll also go into yogic samadhi staring at a toothbrush or a toothpick. I mean, obviously these spiritual personages over the course of human history are, magical and wonderful and, everything you could hope they would be. But they don't do you any good. Ramakrishna doesn't really do you any good because you have to contend with the miracle that's staring you in the face. You can't see through the eyes of Ramakrishna's samadhi or Nirsagadatta's, dwelling as the absolute, or Ramesh Balsakar's consciousness is all there is. All there is consciousness.
Yet people continue to look for a savior.
Yeah, well, it's the same reason our German friend, wanted to hang on to the girlfriend that no longer loved him. Yeah, that's because we're looking for someone or something other than ourselves to bestow relevance. And that's actually impossible. And that's why we're so angry. Because we can't seem to penetrate the myth of relevance seeking, and we simply can't find anyone that will actually bestow it. And if Dafri John appears to bestow it, well, he robs your soul in the process and then fucks you in the ass. I mean, Satya Sai Baba did not bestow any meaningful relevance on anyone. And he had a lot of, blowjobs.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you could say there was all kinds of, accusations about Sai Baba's interest in boys and the various consummations. But, nobody wants to cop to that. That would be like doing the gork. It's pretty funny when you look at all these gurus, and we're just talking in the last however many decades, that, pretty much abused everybody about everything. Money and sex and teachings and property and, lost souls and sucking the life out of everyone, hugging them till 3 o'clock in the morning, making them buy Amma dolls for $500, small little brown faced doll that you can take home and snuggle with if your life is going to shit.
I wonder how Master Eric is doing.
I wonder. Not really, but come on. Eric was a blast. He was crazy, but he was a total blast. You know, I mean, in terms of psychopathic guru, he was the best one. He was the best psychopath on the block. What do we discover when we confront the absolute cessation of all relevance? You know, profound disinterest in the texture of experiencing or the content of experiencing. Maybe it turns out that this is too good to be true. Well, we had a lot of fun. It's 9:30. I don't want to keep anybody up too late. I certainly wouldn't want to interfere with anybody's suffering. Would be selfish. Well, say three Byron Katies and call me in the morning.
Okay.
Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Good night.